Welcome to the Progressing Recruiters Lives Everywhere podcast, brought to you by Amoria Bond. Join us as we talk to our board members and leaders to gain valuable tips, advice, and inspiration for your own professional life. From climbing the career ladder to the evolution of the recruitment industry, we'll cover it all. Within recruitment, there are no limits to how far you can progress, and we want to show you how and why working in recruitment could be the best decision for your life and career. I'm Jenny Walsh, Regional Talent Attraction Manager based in Amoria Bond's Manchester office. In this episode, I'm talking to David Etherington, our Group CEO. David is a veteran of the staffing sector with more than 25 years experience in specialist businesses, and I'm really looking forward to hearing all about his journey. So welcome, David. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jenny.
So I guess to get us started off, please could you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your career journey, and how you became the CEO of Amoria Group?
Yeah, sure, no worries. So firstly, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a son and a brother, and I've got three kids who range between 10 and 27, two girls and a boy. And I've got a menagerie of pets. I've got two horses, two dogs, two cats, and a snake. So that'll give you, aside from the fact that I've got a very lovely wife, which I had omitted, with the exception of saying I was a husband, that gives you a bit of a backdrop on me. Work-wise, I started in recruitment in 1995 with a business called Tech Partners International. Rolling forward, I've worked for six employers during my time, not including Amoria Bond or Amoria Group, and sort of notable firms in that regard. I've mentioned Tech Partners already. Capita, Asprey Marsden and NP Group were the main ones. And that was before launching my own advisory business in 2016, a business called Saltwater. It was all in the making. So, you know, Tech Partners was a fast growth specialist business in technology, originally established in the UK, but then grew out to the US and into the APAC market based out in Australia. And it gave me that first taste of what it was like to work for a small firm that was then growing really quickly and expanding, and that was on the path of generating shareholder value. And at the time, towards the end of that business, I worked with an advisor who was helping us ready for the divestment to Harvey Nash, who were the company that bought us. And I had this moment, an epiphany that said, you know, I've been doing this for 6 years, 7 years. Where's my career going? What do I want to do? And I saw this guy and thought, you know what, you know, down the road, that's where I should be heading. And the other firms I've mentioned there were all scenarios and decisions that were made with support of the mentor. So this guy that had been the advisor, I had asked him if he would mind doing mentoring for me. And literally each time that I changed jobs, you know, I went to him with a list of the potential job offers, what I felt were the key criteria in each one of those jobs and how they lent to a longer term plan for me to become an advisor. So every single one of those, you know, have got their own characteristics in terms of why I changed my job, what it was I was going for with the new employer, etc. And Saltwater, when it eventually came about, and that was post the MBO that I ran with Chris at NP Group, that was a vehicle really to help business owners and leaders in the sector identify opportunities to grow and transform their businesses. And sort of businesses that I worked with, to give you a flavour, were organisations like Henderson Scott, Trinovo, Insight, and of course, Amoria Bond. And I started doing some work with Amoria Bond in October of 2017 and worked in various different capacities, either as a coach to MDs, a coach to founders, or alternatively, pre the CEO role, developing an effective board. So got to a point where the board is probably the longest interview anyone's ever done, but got to a point where the board had felt very much like, you know, I was part and parcel of the furniture and as part of what we were aiming to do as an organization, which is, you know, continued growth, but also seek investment to support that growth. They felt like that remit was an important remit, and they didn't feel that the setup really would be appropriate if they didn't have a point person in place, and offered me the opportunity to pursue that. Which, if I looked back and I looked at all the things that I'd been doing, and I'd had this longer term objective of setting my own business up, and you know, which I'd run for 5 years, you know, if it hadn't been a CEO role, I would have been still doing my, you know, running my own business. You know, didn't have any problems with, but the temptation to lead this business, this particular business, into further investment was too much of an opportunity to pass.
Good. It worked out well. it's a really impressive and varied journey as well, in terms of the types of roles that you've done, and obviously set up your own business. Over that time and you know, those years, what do you believe are the most important qualities for a successful career?
You know, I had the benefit of, I described to you, of insight, and therefore I planned. You know, mine was a long-term plan, and I think that was an important sort of point in the distance for me, if you like, to focus on all the time. And I think that was very helpful. But I think in general, it's the right blend of IQ, EQ, SQ, and AQ. And allow me to explain. And we're all familiar with IQ, so essentially your intelligence, as a measure of someone's comprehension. But research shows that about 80% of adult success comes from EQ, emotional quotient, which is further strengthened by social quotient. And social quotient's the ability to make friends and keep them over long terms, or build relationships and keep them over long terms. The sort of things that you'd expect to see in the midst of all of that stuff, you know, the kind of traits that you, or descriptives that you would see in there, would be a mix of ambition and curiosity and desire to learn, problem solving, ability to build healthy relationships, passion about subjects, adaptability, confidence, and, you know, a really important factor being communication. I think the longevity bit, you know, so I've got the benefit of longevity now, or, you know, dependent on which side of the one in lots of experience or not so much might come with it. But I think from a longevity point of view, is about the ability to weather the storm. And this is where the AQ comes in. We often hear, don't we, people talking about the staffing industry with as having lots of ups and downs, like the roller coaster ride. You know, it's a bit of a cliche, right? So knowing that that's the life that you're going to lead at work, you know, you need to be able to have the ability to cope with the downs, right? And ultimately sustainable downs as well. So you end up with these, you know, these scenarios where some people really can't weather that and others can. And I think, and this is the adversity quotient, you know, this is what the AQ stands for. And you'd see in that scenario, so a different descriptors for that would be qualities such as resilience or durability or patience or consistency, for all that, you know, for that matter. Because I think, you know, being able to ride that and also being seen as somebody that you can trust is going to ride that is quite key. So I think it's a combination of those events. I think it's just the right balance. I'm not saying I'm the perfect example of it. I think I've got a good blend of those things that have enabled me to navigate my way through my career to date. And, you know, I feel when I look back, I think, you know, there's some things, like every time you look back, that you might make different decisions over, equipped with new information or new knowledge. But in the round, I've always been very thoughtful about what I want to do and where I'm heading. And I've kind of owned that, rather than waiting for my boss to tell me what my next job is, or, you know, getting to the point of being dissatisfied and then having to leave somewhere and follow whatever the next thing is. So, yeah, combination of those items, Jenny.
Great. In terms of, like you said, you've always kind of had a plan and a goal in your head in terms of what you want to do next, and you feel like it's been very much within your control. And obviously, that's something we talk a lot about within the Amori Group as well, is having like really clear, smart goals in terms of what you want to do. But I guess, you know, some people work differently and, like you say, might be waiting for that next promotion or whatever that next step might be. What advice would you have in terms of getting really clear on what you want to do next and setting those goals for yourself?
Well, there's a few things here, right? But I think we have our value set, which ownership's part of it. And no one's more responsible for one's career than oneself, right? Probably grammatically terrible that, but the responsibility to sit and look at where you're at and actually take a view in terms of what's the right progression for me, where should I be heading, what should I be doing, holding myself accountable and making sure that I'm doing the things that I should be doing to gain that progression, I think is probably front and foremost, right? I've seen it in a lot of different contexts, but I've seen people that are just waiting to be led like a horse to water. And of course, if you're working like we do in a fast growth environment, for example, you haven't got the luxury necessarily of people that are second guessing everything that you might need from them, right? They're doing a pretty good job of it, but the reality is that, you know, you've almost got to take a stance of the same way we might look at a candidate's resume and make a determination as to whether or not it makes sense to us. You know, why did somebody leave so quick, or what's the time they've spent at that level, or what did they deliver, and what's their achievements? And, you know, we're very judgmental in relation to our approach to doing that. People can often be lacking the same level of radical transparency on themselves. And I think that's the bit where you really need to ask yourself the question, does my progress to date make sense? And am I where I should be? Are the opportunities available to me? Am I delivering what's expected of me? Or do I expect to get looked after without putting maximum effort in? And I think these are all the things that you can be thinking about as part and parcel of progression. But generally, I've found that you get mixed camps. And I think the ownership thing is quite important in that regard.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's really, really great advice. What would you say has been the best career advice that you've ever received?
Gosh, there's so many different things that you pick up. I think that my mentor, a guy by the name of Stuart Rogers, by the way, he's a really, really lovely guy, serial entrepreneur in our sector, a background in management consulting, with a major on HR and people that then came into the staffing sector many, many years ago. And he's really incisive, really unassuming. It's almost like you let someone in to your world without realizing that they're going to be able to pick you apart like a velociraptor, you know. And so one of the things he said to me a long time ago is, you overthink, Dave. All right, don't overthink. Contingencies are really important, but so's presence in the moment and focusing on what you're doing now. So pick your times to think and don't overthink. That would be one. The other one would be, and I don't think this is an uncommon one, but don't take things personally. I think there's much of what happens in the day-to-day workplace which you can translate to somebody saying something about you or your way of doing something or your decisions being critiqued, therefore you're being critiqued or whatever it might be, you know, in that situation. As you progress in, you know, dependent on whatever your ambitions are, but as you progress up the ranks, for example, in terms of seniority, you've got to be prepared to be a recipient of the kind of brickbat response that comes from people, you know, that you might have done all the work and you might have done the thinking and you might have done all the win-win, you know, approach to what you're looking at. But somebody's always got an alternate view as to what they would do, even though they didn't do all that work and it's just off the cuff, their observation. So twofold, I'd say, in that regard, you know, don't overthink and also don't take things personally, because on the latter one, the moment you learn to be objective around that subject, it makes you much more efficient. You can get through without really attaching the residual of those emotions or the personal feelings that can come with feeling like you're being attacked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the don't overthink thing is key, isn't it? Because I know from personal experience, like what it's like, those intrusive thoughts, those what ifs, what if that, and that type of overthinking, isn't, it's not helpful thoughts, isn't it? Did you have anything that you put into practice to help with that, to try and stop the overthinking or control the overthinking?
Yeah. Well, first things first, I listened to the guy, right? And I then listened to myself in terms of when do I do it and why does it happen? There was a while back, and I even remember a podcast I did with one of the founders on another matter. Gosh, you know, probably 7 or 8 years ago, something else, where I talked about imposter syndrome and, you know, the whole stuff that came with it. And I think I was burdened with it for a long time. I don't feel that at all today. And actually, one of the reasons is I went through a program which was designed by a guy by the name of Rob Kelly called the Thrive Program. And it was a real focus on understanding how to manage my thinking, understand how to gain control of my own space and, you know, my energy associated with what I do day to day. And it really caused me to question my beliefs. So what is it? What do I believe and why do I believe it? Anyway, what I discovered in the midst of all of this stuff, that there was stuff that I was hanging on to. And I'll give you an example, right? So I was asked the question, do you believe in luck, right? And of course, you know, my initial response at the outset was, yeah, I do. I think luck's a thing, right? And then I got really taken to pieces in terms of, well, give me examples of where, you know, you've had luck, for example, right? And of course, in every situation, the guy was able to show me that it was circumstantial and it was something that I'd done in advance or prepared, or I was in the right place because of something that had happened, right? And then, of course, he reminded me, he said, what do you use terminology-wise around this subject? And of course, I'd said, well, you know, for example, people refer to touching wood, you know, when it comes to luck for it. He said, have you got any examples where you touch wood on something you said and it happened? And of course, the answer was a flat, outright no. Right. And so I learned around this subject to start with, around the beliefs. And then it led to this scenario where I would be reflecting on the things that I did well. And I thought, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you start collecting a view on where you've helped someone, or you've done something that meant something to somebody else, or, you know, that you've done something that was important for your family, whatever it might be. And every morning when I was walking the dogs, it would create a scenario where you just looked at that situation from a third person's perspective. So, you know, the fact that I might have gone to see my son play football and helped with the team, or rugby, and helped with the team. And somebody standing on the sidelines looking at me saying, he's a good dad, he helps out with his son, he's helping the other parents' kids as well, he's a nice guy, it's, you know, really gives his own time, or whatever it might be, right? And of course, what I started to do over a period of time is recognizing after these short walks that I was collecting 4, 5, 6, 7 things a day that were positive, right? That's not to say I wasn't reflective on negativity, but it was more to do with the fact that actually I'd been overthinking about stuff. I'd been thinking about what people might think about me in the wrong way in the past on a set of wrong belief systems. And then when I'd sorted all of that stuff out and I started looking at it from a really practical point of view of what do I do day to day and how would other people view that, I started to realize that, you know, the things that I'd been thinking about and overthinking about were pointless, literally pointless, like 90% of the time, never transpired, weren't really the fact, you know, so-and-so looked at me a certain way, I think he's got the hump with me, turned into, you know, rather than dwell on that, pick up the phone or drop him a line, how you doing? I felt like you got the hump, you know, what is it? No, I just had, it was always never what you thought it was. So I found that was the perfect way to unravel something that I think had been accompanying me for a long time. And it gave me a lot more clarity. So I'm sorry, it's probably a bit of a roundabout answer, but I think in the round, most often than not, people are walking their day to day with this challenge in their head, this bad speaking to themselves, you know, undermining themselves, thinking about things that might happen that won't happen, you know, all that stuff. And I think, you know, ultimately I just learned a technique that enabled me to stop doing that. Certainly stop doing it as much. It hasn't eradicated it entirely.
Yeah, no, it's really, really sound advice, and I'm sure a lot of people can take away a lot of things from that. And thinking about I guess what we'd spoken about earlier in terms of attributes, you know, you touched on that resilience aspect. I guess, could you tell us a little bit more about a particularly challenging moment that you've had in your career and how you overcame it?
Yeah. So I think there's a good example, I think, would be I'd gone to work for a business called Asprey Marsden. It was at the coincided with the recession in 2008. It was a recruiter that had a heavy reliance on the financial services sector, which you might say, you know, wasn't the ideal decision to go join them at that time. But I liked to challenge, and that they had some clients that were providing them with, even though many others were switching off, there were others that were doing well. And at that moment in time, I think I'd been there about a year, and I'd been approached by the CEO of NP Group in relation to an opportunity that I couldn't turn down. It was a COO role. And of course, you know, I had to look at a situation and say, right, you know, integrity tells me that I've got to leave this business in the right way and join the next business. It was a quite interesting window of time because, you know, in that window of 3 months, what I was faced with as a situation where I had to make sure that I prepared the direct reports into me. I actually felt, you know, when I looked at it, that the direct reports were just a short distance away from being able to stand on their own two feet without somebody like me over the top of them. At the same time, I had to go into a business, you know, coming out of Asprey Marsden, where you'd seen it depleted pretty significantly. You know, they'd had headcount cuts. They'd had cutbacks in spend in general. They had people that were taking deferred pay cuts, you know, to get through the business. And all of a sudden, you've got this guy turn up in this new role to accompany the CEO. And they're making all the assumptions that you'd expect they would assume for somebody senior. So, you know, you must be coming in on a big deal. And, you know, we've been taking pay cuts and we've been letting people go. And so I think first things first, part of that challenge was making sure that I did the right thing by Asprey Marsden, and I did. The second part of the challenge was, you know, coming into the business and gaining hearts and minds from people that had been, I'm going to say, you know, on the ropes for a pretty decent period of time. And of course, viewing much with cynicism and, you know, being in a situation where it's part of the hearts and minds, you know, you'll be familiar as you have been in recruitment for a long time, Jenny, but you know, a lot of the time when you're in leadership roles, part and parcel of your first 90 days is, you know, what's your plan and how are you going to deal with that and what's the approach? And more often than not, you tend to find people that are writing a, you know, a combination between strategic and tactical plans, and a little bit like the old Mike Tyson quote of, you can train as much as you like, but when you step in the ring and someone punches you in the face for the first time, all of that stops, right? And that was not a dissimilar situation. And I can tell you, you know, one of the meetings I had with a director who won't mind me naming him is a guy by the name of Mark Albra. He sat in front of me. He hadn't chosen for me to join the business. And we talked about some of the troubles that they'd had, some of the problems that they'd had. And, you know, he was very, very abrasive and was using language along the lines of, well, we'll see how good you are, won't we, you know, over time. You know, and this is a guy that was reporting to me, right? And, you know, ultimately, I could see the whole reason behind it. I could understand what the challenges were. So basically, I set myself the challenge of getting into that business, pretty well ripped up the 90-day plan that I'd originally gone through preparing, and focused on the things that were most important to those people, and spent, you know, a large amount of time just getting at the desk level, talking to people, whether they were directors, associate directors, managers or staff below, trying to understand the problems that they were faced with and trying to work out how I could do something meaningful for them on that day in that moment. And it's really interesting because, you know, roll forward, I think I joined the business. It had been a bigger business. It had gone back to about 27 heads at the time. And of course, you know, the story after that was that we grew it and we took it to divestment with an MBO where we were roughly 135, 140 heads at the time. But Mark became one of my really good friends. And, you know, he was one of the guys who, you know, came forward. And even at some of the events where, you know, we'd often do like we do within Amoria Group and the different businesses, you know, we have our quarterly events and our annual things. You know, he came forward and, you know, on receiving awards, I think it was within the second quarter of having arrived, you know, as part of his speech, was making really positive thank yous and stuff like that to me. And I felt like it was an opportunity really for me to say, you know, you could easily walk into an environment like that and say, I don't really fancy this. It's not what, this is not what I signed up for. But the challenge was more interesting. You know, it was kind of, you know, it wasn't just the job itself and getting the business ticking and making it work and recover and working with the CEO around making sure we got an executable plan. It was about getting those guys on side, and I almost made it feel like doing a deal, you know, but it felt like by getting them on side and making sure that I really understood them and they could understand me. So that was a pretty challenging point in time.
Yeah, it sounds like a really valuable lesson and a successful outcome as well at the same time, which is always great to hear.
Yeah, it turned out well.
Good.
Yeah.
And what advice would you give to someone who's just starting out in their career in recruitment at the Amoria Group?
At Amoria Group, I would say trust the leaders, trust the L&D team, trust the model. You know, we're all well versed in this, and you know, we've done it a lot of times before. I've sat and spoke to rookies. I go around the offices, as you know, and speak to people and describe it like a formula. You know, the model and the people are the fixed, and the new rookies the variable, and ultimately, as the variable, all you can do is bring your best self to work every day with an appetite to learn and an ambition to develop and, you know, desire to progress. And if you bring that version of variable to the constant, it makes the formula work. You know, like most things in life, you can walk through the door and you can question everything that you see. You know, you can question the reason why something's been done. You can question, you know, the kind of thinking behind the model itself. The reality is that the model works really, really well. And, you know, it's made hundreds of successful recruiters. And as a result, you know, I think in that scenario, all you can do in that situation is, you know, as per whatever your commitment to your own career and your own development, and as per the interview you've gone through, where you've gone through stages of meetings where you're promising, you know, what you're going to bring, your first really most important thing you deliver is your best self.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that example of the formula as well. I've not actually heard that before. But no, excellent.
It's because you're not a rookie. It would have been pointless me saying that to you, Jenny.
I know, I like it though. Cool. And I guess last but not least, what would you say has been your proudest moment as a leader?
This is like picking a favourite kid. And what I normally do in that situation is it's the one that stood in front of me. it tends to be my favourite. So I'm going to give you two. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I know we have time scenarios, I think. But first things first, like, I'm proud of the progression that people make every day at our business. You know, we have it all over the business. And I'm particularly proud of situations where you can see people using their discretionary energy, you know, the energy you're not paid to give, if you like. It's something that's over and above. You know, it's so impressive when you see that. And actually, you may remember, the listeners won't because they weren't there, but you may remember at our AGM, we had a colleague, Stefan van Lammeren, talking about something that he experienced and was responsible for. I mean, I've got to tell you, at the time, when I first heard it, so it was pre-AGM, I'd been speaking about it because it was an area that I was involved in. It made the hairs on my arms stand up, you know, from a point of view of, you know, what we do. And basically, to put it into a capsule of information, he was dealing with a chap who'd immigrated to Amsterdam, didn't have a visa, was waiting for his family to follow him. I'd got some really, really strong skills in relation to this particular technology area that Stefan's responsible for managing a desk around. And every time a recruiter spoke to him, you know, once they worked out that it was in the too hard to do box because this guy didn't have a visa and all the other stuff, they just stopped responding to him. They did that thing that a lot of candidates hate recruiters doing, right? They gaslighted him. So Stefan came into contact with this guy and, you know, cutting a long story short, stuck with the situation. He'd had experience of doing some stuff like this before, but basically took the guy along to the embassy, you know, managed his whole process in terms of generating his visa, managed the situation in terms of really understanding actually the nuances of how somebody can work while they're waiting for visa and how he could then describe that to the potential buyer of that freelance capability. Got this guy into work, got this guy a situation where he then earned his right to work and was able to bring his family across to, you know, across to the country to join him. And when you look at it, it was the best example of positivity and energy given to service. You know, I think it was around best service that we had this particular subject. And, you know, I've got to say, you know, as a colleague, I was like, this is what we do this for. I know we do it because we're in business and we've got, you know, shareholder responsibilities, all the things that you do in terms of growing a company and the things that we're here for. But when you really boil it down to, you know, our purpose, progressing lives everywhere, this was a singularly most impressive example of somebody doing something more than was expected and more than the nine other people beforehand had bothered doing or whatever it might be. So there's that element of pride. And actually, really, I mean, genuinely, that stuff gets to me. I love it. But on the other side, I think just from a point of view of managing my career, I think, you know, the stuff I've managed to do in terms of being part of companies that have grown and divested or grown and acquired, you know, being part of growing businesses and helping people around their ambitions to do with, you know, what they want from their business, to gain the confidence to launch my own business on the back of, you know, executing against a plan that, you know, I designed with the CEO of MP Group, and then doing the same sort of thing for other people, to be then entrusted with the responsibility for Amoria Group and where we're heading. I'm proud of my career. You know, I don't look at it from a point of view of being arrogant or egotistical. I'm just glad, you know, that I worked the way that I did, and you know, that people, you know, felt that I was the right guy to be involved with them, and that, you know, those people I can refer back to them, you know, they're friends. So I think I've done it the way that I'm happy doing it, and yeah, I'm proud of that.
Excellent. Thank you very much, David. That concludes today's episode. I'm sure that everyone who's listened today gained valuable insights. So yeah, thank you very much for sharing your journey with us.
It was a delight. Thank you, Jenny.
No problem. For more information about career and recruitment, please check out our website, amoriabond.com. Thanks very much for listening.